Back together again, you and I chatting it up Friday style, the 21st of August, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. Could there be more professional hockey in Bridgeport's future? I chatted about that along with former Bridgeport Sound Tigers play-by-play voice Phil Jubileo. ABC campaign reporter Jared Kofsky dropped by to talk about whether high grocery prices are going to be a big factor in the midterms, while former Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso was here for his weekly update.
So is the city of Bridgeport and Bridgeport proper, or even Fairfield County here in Connecticut, is the county, is the city of Bridgeport, or are they together viable professional sports markets? Now, there are sports in the markets. You have, obviously, the teams on the men's and women's side at Fairfield University, Sacred Heart University. You've got the Danbury Hat Tricks pro ice hockey team playing in the Danbury Arena, a little bit away from lower Fairfield County, but they're there. But the question again being raised here is about the viability of the city of Bridgeport and maybe Fairfield County as to being a professional sports viable market. I mean, you're talking about Bridgeport here. You're talking about the city's largest municipality. Why am I bringing this up? Well, apparently, according to this story here in the Hearst, Connecticut media papers, Connecticut Post, by our buddy Brian Lockhart, one of the proposals that has been submitted to the city of Bridgeport, remember they were soliciting, and I think the mayor said they got about a half dozen various proposals, concert venues, clubs, different sort of spaces, leaving the arena the way it is, or cutting it up or slicing it up, whatever. I guess one of the proposals would keep a minor league hockey team playing at the Bridgeport Arena. Now, if you remember, right when this thing was hot in the news that we knew the Islanders slash Sound Tigers were leaving, and they are now in Hamilton, Ontario, starting playing about a month or so as the Hamilton Hammers, and they are the farm team of the NHL's New York Islanders. I was one who told you that the building and the market might be viable, maybe not to get another American Hockey League team in the Bridgeport area, even though it would be a viable market. It's 150,000 people, and that's just in the city of Bridgeport alone. Now, are they all hockey fans? No, apparently not. But you have a scenario here where you've got the state's biggest municipality in one of the richest areas of the country. And I kind of told you, I said I was sure that one of the proposals that the city would eventually get, I was saying this, you know, weeks and weeks ago, would probably say, hey, look, you shouldn't abandon a professional sports team in the city of Bridgeport. And again, years ago in what is now, of course, the highly successful Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater, we had the ballpark at Harbor Yard. So baseball has come, lived, and left in Bridgeport. Hockey has come, lived, and left in Bridgeport. So as far as professional sports, now I know we have in the area, again, we have Sacred Heart, we have Fairfield. I get that. But what about the viability of bringing a hockey team back to Bridgeport? Now, the Islanders slash Sound Tigers didn't do real well in attendance over the past season. In fact, it's noted in this story, they would draw crowds sometimes of 3,000 to 4,000 people. But the Islanders, in the end, and I was watching this online, they still ranked 24th in attendance for the American Hockey League's 32 teams. Now, is that a reason because people don't want to drive down from New Haven County? Because remember, New Haven's been without hockey for, you know, a good many years now. So you have that. You have maybe people not wanting to come to a game from lower Fairfield County. Maybe there's just no real buzz about it, being the Islanders farm team versus the Hartford Wolfpack, which, of course, is the New York Rangers farm team. But putting all that aside, what do you think about this? And apparently there is a company, it sounds like a sports promotion company, entertainment company, and apparently it is a Canadian company, or actually part of a group of individuals headed by a gentleman named Doug Marshall. They operate as PSEC-M. PSEC-M, that group, headed, I guess, by Mr. Marshall, submitted a bid to operate the arena in Bridgeport's downtown and to bring in a new minor league expansion team, whether it be in the American Hockey League, which is like AAA hockey. It's like Major League Baseball calling somebody up from AAA. And, you know, you saw guys go up and down between the Islanders / Sound Tigers all the time. And Hartford and the Rangers, I mean, that's the way it works. But there are other levels of minor league hockey. The one right below it is technically it's kind of like double A hockey. So it's two steps from the NHL, not just one. Just the way the Hartford Athletic soccer team is two steps from MLS, not just one. So is Bridgeport a double-A sports or hockey market versus a triple-A sport market? Says here, representatives with Mayor Joe Ganim's and Governor Ned Lamont's offices have spent the past month and a half, month plus, weighing in on those proposals. While a few of those bidders have previously gone public with their intentions, Mr. Marshall has not, but that group apparently is offering a few more details. The company is incorporated in Delaware and primarily operates out of Florida. Now, Delaware and Florida, you know what that means? Taxes. They're smart people. Don't expose yourself to Connecticut business taxes, whoever this Mr. Marshall is. But initially, he looks like a smart guy to me. They want to keep professional hockey at Bridgeport's arena while maintaining the building as an entertainment hub, quote-unquote, for concerts and other major events. So, would it be an American Hockey League team, or would it be what's called a team in the ECHL, or the Coast League, which essentially would be two steps below the NHL, a step below the American Hockey League that the Islanders were in. And the ECHL used to be known as the East Coast Hockey League, and now it's called the E, or the Coast League, even though that East Coast League technically has teams all over the entire span of North America. So we ask this to get up and underway here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, you may not be a hockey fan. I get it. I understand it. But let's look at this in general. Wouldn't it be cool to just have somebody wearing a uniform that says Bridgeport on it? So should Bridgeport consider bringing professional hockey back to the city's downtown arena? Should that be, you know, an added plus depending upon who the city wants to go with? Or are you the kind of person that says, no, sports is not where it's at, it's something else? What do you think? Talk or text, or on our Facebook page, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Does Bridgeport need a pro sports team again? Now, in the greater Bridgeport area, we've got a lot of sports per se. We've got some great high school basketball, softball, baseball, football. We have that, of course. Covering a lot of that on the Rudin Report right here at Connoisseur Media and WICC. We have that. We have the great stuff going on at Fairfield University, at Sacred Heart University. We have that. We have the University of Bridgeport. Great sports there. Go UB. Wearing that purple. But there's nothing really on a professional level left that says Bridgeport on the uniform. Does the Great Park City need that? You may say, well, Paul, the team we had just left. Yeah, but they were here for 25 years. And even if the team or a hockey team or maybe, you know, some team in the developmental league or the NBA or whatever, even if that team only draws 2,000 or 3,000 people a night per venue, it still brought a few thousand people down into the downtown area, just the way the Bluefish did when they were playing baseball when the ballpark at Harbor Yard was there, and it's since been transformed into the very successful Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. But, you know, having said that, are you intrigued by this? Are you someone who would say, yeah, Bridgeport should go after another pro hockey team? Apparently, reported here in the Connecticut Post, one proposal that was submitted to Mayor Joe Ganim's office and to the city after the announced departure of the Islanders to head to Canada, becoming the Hamilton Hammers in Ontario. One proposal would manage the building along with keeping a minor league hockey team playing there. Shouldn't the state's largest municipality of 150,000, very good, the vast majority of them, very good people, hardworking people who aren't doing anything with ballot shenanigans, shouldn't there be a team that proudly calls itself Bridgeport on its uniforms? Or is this kind of like, yeah, Paul, hockey, been there, done that. Yeah, maybe doesn't mean you have to have a team to be a great city. And I understand that. I get that. I understand that. But, you know, Hartford has the Wolfpack. Hartford has the Yard Goats. You know, and I understand New Haven has all the Yale teams. There's kind of been a reboot of Yale athletics with football and basketball and baseball and hockey over the past 10, 15, 20 years. Quinnipiac is in Hamden. We all get that, how well I know that. But is Bridgeport sadly kind of like, at least on the professional level, is Bridgeport kind of like barren for a team, whether it's, you know, football back in the days? Who remembers the Bridgeport Jets? Yes. They weren't singing J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Bridgeport had minor league football at one time. It had, of course, baseball, hockey. Did it have basketball? I don't know. So should the city seriously entertain this? Now, again, you know, who knows what's in the rest of the proposal here. But again, interesting story from Hearst Connecticut Media, Brian Lockhart. There is a Canadian-based pro hockey consultant named Doug Marshall. He's part of a group headquartered, incorporated in Delaware, Texas, headquartered out of Florida, Texas. The group is called PSEC-M. They submitted a bid to operate the arena and to launch a new minor league expansion team. Now, you may say, hey, Paul, you know, yeah, you bring in a new league here. It's just little backwater towns. Oh, no, it's not. You know who's in the Coast League? I'll tell you about that coming up right here on WICC. You know, a few weeks ago when the news broke that the city of Bridgeport was soliciting ideas, plans as to who wants to run the arena, or at least assist the city in running the arena downtown, I thought out loud, as they pay me to do here, I say, you know, somebody's going to allude to bringing hockey back there. And I correctly predicted it could be an East Coast League team or a Coast League team, which is essentially double-A hockey, the Sound Tigers / Islanders being triple-A. Is that practical? Has that ship sailed after a good 20-plus year run here in Bridgeport? Joining us right now is one of my hockey buddies. You may see him on a regular basis starting again in just a few weeks on ESPN and ESPN Plus. He's the television voice of the Quinnipiac University men's and women's hockey teams. Got to call some radio games with this gentleman. And when they need a fill-in, they look at my name and they say, all right, give him a call. Phil Jubileo is here. Phil, how are you?
Paul, I am wonderful. And I have to say, anytime I get to chat with you on WICC, it is a wonderful day, and you're a true clairvoyant for predicting this proposal that just came out yesterday.
Yeah, now, people should know, Phil was also the broadcast voice for years of the Bridgeport Islanders / Sound Tigers. Phil, A, are you surprised somebody is alluding to hockey again in Bridgeport? And no matter what league it would be, AHL or the Coast League, in your vast experience, could this work again, or has that ship sailed?
Well, first off, I'm not surprised. You have a very nice arena readily made for hockey. It doesn't need much in the way of improvements. I mean, there are going to be some improvements if they move forward. As far as whether it could work or not, I'm honestly not sure. I think it's a pretty big hill to climb to see something really successful. The exception would have been, and that no longer is the case, at least until 2029, if the New York Rangers decided to leave Hartford and move to Bridgeport. Because if that ever happened, mm-hmm. you would see 6,000 to 7,000 fans a night,
yeah.
lock, stock, and barrel on a solid basis, but that's not happening.
You know, Phil, people might say, and I've tried to remind them of this, to be careful with their words, oh, it's just hockey, or it's just basketball, or it's just the G League. But again, if you have an anchor tenant, that's mm-hmm. 30 to 35 to 40 nights where the arena management and the guys and gals that crunch the numbers say, well, at least we have rear ends in the seats for 40 nights or so.
Absolutely, and none of these other proposals have that, and they're varied, right? There's a lot of different things. I know Howard Stefan, who was my boss
yeah.
with the Bridgeport
yep.
Sound Tigers for 9 years, and with Live Nation and the amphitheater next door. He has something that's cooking and would also require $50 million of state involvement. And the difference here is that this particular group, the one that wants to bring hockey to Bridgeport, mm-hmm. isn't asking for any state funds. Now that becomes, you know, something that potentially is desirable in a bidding process if the state and the city don't have to write a big check.
The gentleman involved here bills himself, Phil, as a hockey consultant. He's, I guess, incorporated in Delaware, Texas. He runs out of Florida, Texas. Explain to people here, Phil, because you and I have seen these guys over the years, and the definition varies. What exactly is a hockey consultant?
I don't know. It sounds like a job I should have.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's got a pretty good thing going. And I believe he's in Canada. And what I found interesting in Brian Lockhart's article, and
yeah.
folks should go out and read it, is that he said, well, you know, winning is what's going to be what draws people to the building. And I believe he might actually be a Canadian national. And I was pondering, I'm like, well, if you are in Canada, that's the current train of thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difference. You know, Canada is treated differently, or hockey is treated differently in Canada, of course, where winning would bring people to the seats. I did a quick analysis, and I was looking just at last year's AHL numbers.
Yeah.
Your record does not necessarily correlate with how many butts are in the seats. There's so much more that goes to it, and especially a market like Bridgeport, where you can't really even draw from Bridgeport proper.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big population of people that don't follow hockey. So you're looking at the surrounding suburbs all around in Fairfield County,
mm-hmm.
and that is who you have to draw from. So it's a tough market to draw well in. Again, I have a lot of experience being there for 9 years. It was always hard. It took a lot of groups. It took a lot of getting the youth hockey element involved to get them in the building. Winning helps, but it is not the be-all and end-all.
Phil Jubileo was the guest. And, Phil, yeah, I mentioned this earlier before we hooked up here today. You know, back in the Halcyon days when the Whalers were around and the Nighthawks in New Haven, I mean, you couldn't sit down at home and stream any one of 40, 50, or 100 movies every hour. There weren't, you know, 3 to 5 all-news cable channels. I think we've migrated away, although we still love the game and people love basketball, hockey, football, soccer. It's really just another form of entertainment. Now, that's got to compete with everything else.
It does, and it's not just those stay-at-home options that you're talking about. When you think about hockey just in Connecticut, and take Hartford away, you know, they're not necessarily that close to Bridgeport, But you have Sacred Heart right down the road in a beautiful building. Quinnipiac draws exceptionally well. You have Yale. There are four, UConn as well, four exceptionally good hockey programs at the college level in this state. And having called now college hockey for a decade, having worked in the American League for about the same amount of time, the quality of play from what a fan is going to watch in a building live is on par. And you could argue the AHL has more overall talent, for sure.
Yeah.
But the competition level, the compete, the drive, there's something about college hockey that is unlike what you would ever see in the American Hockey League. The AHL players, as talented as they are, view it as a stepping stone to the NHL. So development is more important than anything else. But now in college hockey, development's important, but so is winning. And that is the X factor, in my opinion, which does make college hockey a bit more entertaining.
Yeah, so Phil, final question here. In the market size, and as you said, you did a lot of marketing and sales and stuff along with being behind the microphone for all those years here in Bridgeport. Market size, Bridgeport is the Bridgeport market right now, Phil, as you see it and analyze it, is it a better fit for the East Coast League versus the AHL? Although when you look at the Coast League, I tell people these are some pretty big metros to boot.
There are, you know, the ECHL is interesting where you have several markets that are very big. You have others that are on the smaller side. And you see that, too, in the AHL on some level where you have some smaller markets. Utica, New York has an AHL team. They draw less in the league, but they are a tiny market. The ECHL may do well, but, again, it's how you market the team to the community. If you have an NHL affiliate, who is it? If you have the Rangers, I think it helps. Just because of the Rangers' popularity in the area, maybe the Boston Bruins, maybe on some level the Islanders, I can't say for sure. But there has to be so much more to it than just who your affiliate is, and you have to do other things to get people in the building. Where the ECHL is helpful is it could be a little bit more budget-friendly because of the salaries that get paid to those players. So there's a little bit of a lower price point, but and that might help your ticket prices and getting more fans in the building.
The former radio voice of the Danbury Trashers, the former radio voice of the aforementioned Bridgeport Sound Tigers / Islanders, and currently you see him as the television voice of the Quinnipiac University men's and women's programs, my buddy, my pal, Phil Jubileo. Phil, I know I must owe you money somewhere, so we'll square that up during the season coming up, all right? All right?
Absolutely, Paul. You are a gem. Always love chatting with you. Thank you so much.
All right, Phil. Drive safely, my friend. Phil, take it easy. Phil Jubileo right there. Again, the television voice of the Quinnipiac University men and women. He pops up on some Sacred Heart games from time to time. And also the former voice, you know him, you love him back then, of the Danbury Trashers. Yeah, inflation, shrinkflation, right? How many of us have been walking out of our local grocery store, a little town market like near me or a big mega store, and you look in the bag, you say, how was that $40? So now our grocery store price is going to be a big indicator here. Heading toward the midterms in a few weeks. We asked that of ABC campaign reporter Jared Kofsky. Hey, Jared, good afternoon. It's Paul in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Paul. Great to be here. You know, it's interesting because I do some grocery shopping in Fairfield County time to time.
And I see
those prices going up. Yeah, I'm in Fairfield County quite a bit.
Yeah.
But as part of the story I've been working on, I've been looking into these grocery prices and the potential impact on the midterms. And I was talking to some voters just across the state line in Westchester County, New York, and Putnam County, New York. Yeah. The reason why I was talking to voters in those districts is because it's in the 17th district. That's a swing district right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it remains to be seen, okay, with the midterms coming up, how are some of these supermarket shoppers who are seeing these really, really high grocery bills, how is that going to impact their decision? And it seems like it might.
Really? So I was going to ask you that leading into this. So what are you hearing from them, Jared? Are they frustrated? Are they angry? What are they telling you?
People are really frustrated because the cost is keeping going up. When they go to the grocery store, every item seems like it's more expensive, and it's year after year after year. But it's not just that. It's also when you combine the other things with cost of living that have increased. You look at the price of gas, and the salaries haven't kept up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we've been looking into a lot, you might remember back when Donald Trump was running for president, back in 2024, he had that press conference in New Jersey in Bedminster, and he had all the groceries on the table. Like, he had, you know, there were boxes of cereal, there were cups, you know, containers of coffee, there was bacon, there was all this stuff up there, and he said that on day one, he was going to lower grocery prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so back in 2024, it was really Republicans that were placing the emphasis on the grocery issue. It was a main part of Republican campaigns in 2024 that the Biden and Harris administration, they were saying, had caused really high grocery prices. So Republicans had seized on that at the time, because we all remember grocery prices were really high in 2024 also. But now in 2026, it's sort of the opposite that we're starting to see. It's Democrats who are using the similar messaging about grocery prices in their campaign materials as well. We're going to have to see what voters end up deciding.
Yeah, you know what, Jared? I mean, obviously, and you're doing this in some pretty high-income areas, Fairfield County, Westchester County. Even if you make money and you're quote-unquote comfortable, in air quotes, people don't like having to make decisions where they can't get all of their favorite stuff. And they may be upset, well, you know, I can't buy whatever, I got to go without bacon this week, or I can't buy, you know, the candies or whatever. And yeah, they take that anger with them to the voting booth. Maybe. We'll see, I guess.
Exactly. And it's little decisions like that, you know, yes, they impact every person who's shopping at the supermarket, but they do ultimately have an impact on the economy as well. You know, if people are saying, you know what, I'm going to pass up the bacon, I'm going to pass up the coffee, that, of course, adds up over time. But also, it's not just impacting the items that people are choosing to buy or not buy. It's also choosing where they decide to shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be worth going to the next town over or the town after that if there's a discount supermarket that you can save a lot of money. You know, I was talking to one voter up in Peekskill in northern Westchester County, and she was saying, you know, she was at this discount supermarket in Peekskill. She goes, I don't usually shop here,
mm-hmm.
but I went here because I just came from another supermarket. There was some item that she was looking for. It was much higher, and, you know, she went to this place instead. And that's a pattern we're seeing pretty much across the board. And as long as these prices are continuing to go up, we're probably not going to see that going away.
ABC's Jared Dukofsky, campaign reporter. Jared, thanks, man. Be good. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
All right, there you go, Jared Dukofsky. Let's get the opinion of this gentleman as to what might want to happen or not, hockey or not, with the arena downtown, other things going on we haven't talked to in a while. Chris Caruso standing by. Hey, Chris, good afternoon. It's Paul. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. Good to speak with you.
So, Chris, what do you think of this now? You've got this Canadian guy purported to be a hockey consultant, and he told Brian Lockhart at the Hearst, saying, hey, my group and I are ready not only to run the building but to bring another hockey team back in town. I mean, Chris, you know, hockey is hockey, it's entertainment, but what are your thoughts on this? And wouldn't it be nice if there's another pro team, albeit minor league, carrying the name Bridgeport on its uniform?
Well, you know, I think the city should consider every offer of a developer that wants to come to Bridgeport. But with hockey, for example, I believe Bridgeport had a hockey team here.
Yeah.
We had a football team here.
Oh, yeah.
That never made it. So I think one of the things the city has to do, the city, not the developer, has to go out and figure what interest is there toward a hockey arena.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the developer tells you it's not going to cost anyone anything but him, lock up your wallet. Because
you sound cynical. Mr. Caruso,
well,
you sound cynical.
I lived in this city all my life, and I've been in politics 50 years.
Yeah.
And if I had a nickel for everyone that told me,
don't worry about
it, I'd be a millionaire by now, okay? I'd be down in Florida or somewhere else. So I think that's something that has to be looked
all
at.
Right.
The other thing, you already have a hockey rink in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And the city has a lease with them.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about. Yeah.
Right. So I'm not saying, you know, end conversation. By all means, have conversation. But the city also has to decide, and we've talked about this before, what does it want to be?
The long-term
goal. Does it
want
to be a sports and entertainment capital, which is fine. If that's the case, you've got a plan, you got a vision, you have the strategic plan.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you're going to put a hockey arena in, and then all of a sudden that goes bad. And then what do you do?
Yeah.
So I think, again, yes, let's consider every offer. but we've got to go clear-eyed and we've got to be prepared if this comes in. How does that fit in with other things in the downtown area?
Yeah. And Chris, I am quite impressed that in that little rant you just gave, you said you would go to Florida, which is a nice right-wing Republican low tax.
My sister wants me down there.
Really?
And my brother lives in Texas. And my sister, you know, is very devout Catholic.
Yeah.
And I said, as long as there's a church around, maybe I do it, you know?
All right. And you said your brother's in Texas?
Yeah, Euless, Texas.
Boy, wait a minute. So this must elicit some interesting family discussions, Chris.
Oh, it does. Both of them want me to come. Yeah. And I said, I'm not into alligators for Florida. And Texas, there's too many guns.
And it's a dry heat, too. Remember that.
That's right. I went down to see my sister in Florida.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all the traffic stopped near a bridge. And it was because an alligator was crossing the bridge. And I said, you know, this doesn't work for me, you know?
So. Chris, we haven't talked to you since the results of the primary. Ned Lamont, 68-32. We all figured he'd win. But, Chris, what does the 32% that Josh Elliott was able to garner in that campaign and in that primary, and also a primary that had a relatively low turnout in the middle of August. But what do the numbers tell you?
Well, you know, it was a 2-1,
yeah,
which I kind of expected. You know, Ned Lamont has name recognition. He's done many good things that people equate with. And I think the power of the incumbency.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hasn't screwed up a lot, you know, where, you know, there isn't a feeling of change out there by people, you know. They're fairly content with his leadership. So I expected that. Now, the next step is going to be messaging.
Yeah.
And will the messaging get that 32% or a part of that? I kind of believe many of those folks who voted in the primary will vote for him in the election.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's messaging and how the message is going to be. You know, you've got two wealthy titans in the way.
Yeah.
Now, Fazio may not be a millionaire, but, you know, he lives in Greenwich. He has some wealth, and he's going to go against another wealthy guy.
Yeah.
If you notice, there hasn't been a tax on Lamont's wealth, you know, because it's a little hard to do.
Yeah.
And they're both Fairfield County, you know, folks. They live in Fairfield County. I think both from Greenwich, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So it's going to be the appeal to the rest of the state. But I'd give it to Ned if there isn't a screw-up in his campaign, if he's able to lay out policies of what he wants done over the next 4 years, I think he probably will pull this out. Fazio is no slouch, though. I've told you that.
Yeah.
He's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about issues that are affecting everyday people. So it's up to, you know, Ned to talk about the things he's done to help everyday people and a platform, a message that will accommodate that. You know, it's kind of back and forth. Fazio talks about electric rates, costs, and, you know, Ned's talking about things he's done, but that message has to resonate. And I think it's an affordability issue. I still feel that, and I know it's kind of a corny word, but, you know, how people live and how they're able to live on very, you know, Fairfield County, Connecticut isn't the easiest state to live in financially, right? So I think, again, it's what the message Ned puts out there. But I think going in, he has a good chance, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's been using the MAGA stuff. I don't know if you can, you know, put that on Fazio. I don't think Fazio is part of that. And I don't think Trump is going to come out. If Trump comes out for Fazio, I think in this state, it will be a problem, you know?
Well, if the polls indicate, you know, that the race may be closer than people think, Chris, and Donald Trump may want to make an appearance, I think you and him should get together for a little Zambuca. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, no, of course. A little espresso and,
Hey,
cappuccino,
Oddly enough, I ran into Josh Elliott yesterday in my hometown of Wallingford, and I, you know, because we had met here at the station. And, you know, Chris, I asked him, I said, so? And he said to me in so many words, he goes, I was thrilled. He goes, I got one out of every, he goes, I finished,
yeah.
I got one third of the vote. I got my funding late. And so he goes, listen, my message, he told me, he goes, Paul, my message got out there and maybe we try to build on it. So from that point of view, he was thrilled, he told me.
Oh, yeah. You know, listen, as I've always told you, and if you go back over all the governors, liberal or progressive candidates usually win primaries. It's the general election they have trouble with because most voters are in Connecticut are moderate.
Yeah.
So they win primaries. And, yeah, he put up a good fight. There's no question about it. You know, he did get funding late, which hurt him. You know, if the campaign was run differently, he may have made more than 30, you know.
Yeah.
I think Lamont was counting on the cities in particular, which is normal, and they came out. But the turnout was terrible, and I think that's the reason August needs to change. It probably should be in September because people are vacationing or getting ready for school, and these elections don't have a priority, so maybe move it to September. And, you know, that way more people will. But keep in mind, early voting was over, what was it, Paul, over 50,000?
Yeah,
people did early voting.
Which, 8 or 9 days,
Yeah, that's very positive.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing. But, you know, you look back at a campaign and you evaluate it, and I think that's what Josh has done and said, yeah, you know, I got 32%, and maybe we can build for it. So I wouldn't turn a blind eye on Josh, you know.
Yeah.
He's going to work again. And you see the coalition he builds, you know, statewide. You know, years ago, Bill O'Neill was challenged to be a lieutenant governor with Ella Grasso.
Yeah.
And Ella didn't want him for whatever reason.
Yeah, I heard this, but,
But, you know, Bill O'Neill was the chairman of the party.
Yeah.
And the years that the Republicans were running the state, he went to every single town, every Democratic town committee, even the smaller ones upstate, you know, Union and all those areas.
Yeah, Heartland.
He went.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening, because of his work in the off year, he became the lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating, but it shows the work. So whatever Josh does in the next, you know, several years could indicate whether he could, you know, become governor. But it takes work. You got to get in the vineyard. You know, you've got to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
You got to help them where they need help. If a town needs help, but it's possible. But you got to get out in the vineyard. And I think he's willing to do that.
Sure.
I think he's a fighter. But you know, the chapter for right now, I think Josh has to build and then see what happens.
Absolutely, Chris. Always great to have your perspective on this. Take care, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, Paul, take care.
Appreciate it. Take care. Yeah.